Off the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Royal Ascot Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And there are two races in at Royal Ascot, and we'll look at what's going on there pretty quickly. I do have to say that without the Royal Enclosure and you know, without anything in the on the periphery, just a smattering of personnel scattered about, kind of tough to tell this from Fawner. with all due respect, it's really unusual, and the horses are top notch and all that, and we've had the handicap that opened things up, the Buckingham Palace, and just minutes ago, an absolutely thrilling Queen Anne. And let me ask Case. Case, what do you think? Should I try to use my video? See if we can't do it that way. Okay, because Cases was very choppy, and actually I was listening in, and for whatever reason, the feed was not great. But this was the first of the Group 1s, and the Queen Anne, the 4 and ups, and in terms of star power, we had talked about Circus Maximus and Terra Bellum. They were vying for favoritism on the betting shop market, and Circus Maximus was I haven't checked the actual final odds. I'm curious, actually, now that we say that. The final odds, Circus Maximus ended up at 5-2, had been as low as 2-1, and 9-2 on Terra Bellum. So they are your top choices. There were a couple of other single price types like Fox Chairman and Mohathir for Sheikh Hamdam. Actually, for Sheikh Hamdam, that's a Shadwell horse. And who else? Roseman as well, 9-1. But the focus was certainly on the the top pair. And let's see if we can't give you the audio of what turned into a absolutely terrific Queen Anne Stakes. And the answer is no, we can't, because mine just jumped from Ascot to Kenilworth, race 7. That's too bad. All right, so if we find the feed, maybe the stretch run somewhere on a replay. Essentially, the top pair that we're hinting at, Circus Maximus and Terra Bellum, they basically emerged fairly late, and the two of them headlong to the wire. Terra Bellum and Frankie Dettori looking like a winner 75 yards out, and Circus Maximus, Ryan Moore and Coolmore and Flaxman, the Galileo colt, surges late and gets the muzzle out in front. And kind of a long nose at the wire. Circus Maximus taking the Queen Anne. And, one of the topics, of course, we talked to Kev Humphreys about, was, and with Nick Luck last week, and we'll talk in a little bit as well with Vance Hansen. But, the circumstance that sees so many of these horses making a first start of the season. And Circus Maximus, as we mentioned yesterday and also last week, coming out of the Breeders' Cup Mile, beaten just 2 and change by Uni and Got Stormy and Without Parole. And Circus Maximus kicks off the 4-year-old season, the Galileo colt, bred by Flaxman and partnered in with Coolmore, That was terrific. You'll see the replay when you get a chance, and don't miss it. And certainly a, you know, excellent try by Terrabellum, the See the Stars filly for Godolphin. And in the first, the big group of horses in the Buckingham Palace, and this was a spot to be reaching for prices, as we discussed. The favorite, that Darrick, goes off at 9-2, Gosden and Frankie Dettori, but it was the other, the proverbial other stablemate. In this case, 17-1, Mota Kyle, with Jim Crowley, who had his choice, and the four-year-old trained by Richard Hannon, a nice mutual. And, you know, the field, of course, splits out, and you had, you know, the horses kind of all scattered all over the track heading to the wire. And one of the other Hamdams, Mutamasik, who was 7-1, ends up third in here, but nice price in the opener, the Buckingham Palace. So two races in, and we'll be keeping tabs, and the Ribblesdale is next in about 18 minutes, give or take. The Kingstand later, the other Group 1, the Duke of Cambridge as well. And you've also got the King Edward, the Group 2. And then things close out late morning with the Ascot Handicap, the 2.5-mile event. So I hope everybody's already enjoying it. NBCSN and TVG with the coverage all week. So off and running, and we're going to talk more, and we'll get some on-the-fly thoughts from Vance Hansen at the top of the second hour. Let me give you a few other pieces of news and feedback from yesterday. Indiana getting started and having a very good opening card and opening day into the early evening. And a great start to the pick five for those that taking advantage, the tick under 12% takeout. Pick five, and Tom Amos and Maggie Moss. Familiar sets of connections. Started the season off at Indiana yesterday with Albin Jimenez, and Sentimental Journey gets things going. There were some nice prices early, too. A couple of 20-plus-to-1 shots. We're getting things rolling. The track seemed very fair yesterday. And, of course, the card started with a bunch of sprints. The 5-furlong sprints early and a couple of routes on the grass. And things seemed very fair and very even. And then when they started the pick five sequence, certainly kind of an overpay when it came to, and that's the theme of these pick fives. Not a single favorite, and only two favorites on the thoroughbred portion of the card. The Moss Amos horse was a favorite, 3-2, and then in the fourth, the Indiana bred Maiden Special for three and ups. You had a favorite in there, but otherwise, the pick five sequence, you had co-third choice, third choice, fourth choice, second choice, second choice. So with all beaten favorites, you were assured that this thing would pay well, but it paid way over twice the parlay. And you had a 1680 winner getting going, and in fact, Gennaro Garcia wins the first two legs, 1680, unmoored, and then Shakes Creek, who was 5-2 on the morning line, but ended up going off at 5-1 as the third choice, pays $12. Mohawk in that nice first level allowance going a mile on a turf. That was the Rudy Brissett, Albin Jimenez again. And that was a $10 winner. And obviously a $10 winner, fourth choice, gives you an idea of how, you know, confused the betting public was here. You had the favorites were all, you know, the top four or five choices were, you know, within a couple of dollars of each other. And then Vanilla Beanback, Tom Amos with a first-time starter, pays $8 as the second choice, and $8.60 for Voluble, who did take money, was 8-1 morning line and got bet down to 3-1 for Bob Hess. And Voluble closes out the $2,478 pick five, and the parlay was just over $1,000. So 2.5 times the parlay, and this has been the theme. They come back today. Another nice group of races. The pick five today starts at Indiana at 3:44. Indiana Bred made the special for the elders, then a mile and a 16th on the grass. Fillies and mares open, first level allowance. Maiden special again, going short on the dirt for the boys. Fillies, three-year-old fillies, a mile on turf. The feature, nice group of nine. And the thoroughbred action and the pick five, pick four close out with another maiden special weight going five on the main. Indiana Breds, 3, 4, and five-year-olds. Got a couple of first-timers, one, two, three, looks like four first-timers in that group. So Indiana Grand with a grand opening yesterday, and they handled just under $2.5 million, which was also twice of essentially what they handled opening day a year ago. So they were very pleased in Indiana, and great way to start. A couple of other circuit notes let's mention later in the show. We'll close out a busy morning with John Kern from Delaware Park. Delaware opens tomorrow. And as I mentioned, the $100,000 Obeya with a nice, really nice group. And I reached out to Rich Glazer, who is our longtime and everybody's longtime associate at Delaware Park, one of the sweetest ovals and facilities in the game. Transcends the Northeast, arguably the nicest paddock in North America. And if you've never been, as things loosen up and you can venture down, literally, when I say seconds off of 95, I am not kidding. You literally, you can almost see the racetrack. You can almost see the backstretch from 95. Just tremendous. So get to Delaware. It's really, really a pleasant. In fact, Joe Clancy yesterday kind of ticked the. I knew I wanted to get a Delaware conversation in, and so I reached out to Rich to finish up the Rich Glazer storyline. Rich, he by doctor's orders is still kind of quarantined, and so he's not working yet, and won't be part of the, you know, the action right now, early on here in the meet at Delaware starting tomorrow, which will, you know, be a, you know, which would be either a surprise or just an obvious absence. And so we'll catch up hopefully with Rich somewhere along the season when the doctors allow him to come out of lockdown. So John Kern is going to join us. And if you haven't looked at that card yet, Delaware, I mean, it may be very tough to sustain the kind of fields they put together for opening day, certainly, but they're going to start with a flourish at Delaware. So we'll talk. I should mention too that I saw some news regarding Finger Lakes, and for those of us in New York and those that enjoy the lakes, they're going to appear set for starting the season July 13th and running till November 25th. They'll run 3 days a week in July, and then August through November, they'll run Monday through Thursday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in July, and then 4 days, Mondays through Thursdays, at Finger Lakes, starting July 13th. And they're just waiting for some state approval, but Finger Lakes will be added as well. So I wanted to slip that piece of news. There were some other tidbits, and they included the news yesterday that certainly disappointed the camps involved in the stake action, notably the Belmont Stakes action on Saturday. NYRA saying that owners will not be able to attend yet, and including Saturday. So they just had not had the amount of time and the ability to figure out added logistics to, you know, bringing, you know, outside people and you know, who knows how many would, you know, would take part necessarily. But Jack Knowlton disappointed and expressed that to Dave Greinig. If you didn't see Dave's piece at DRF, as it happens, I mentioned to you yesterday the chance on Friday to have dinner at Pinnell's Friday night, and Bruce Cerrone, who owns Pinnell's, his family, and Bruce is a partner in Saratoga and on Tis the Law. And so he mentioned to me on Friday that if the decision came down, no owners in attendance, that there would be a party at Pinnell's for the owners in the area. And Bruce said they expect about, you know, 25 to 40, give or take, to enjoy Belmont Day and specifically the stakes on Saturday at Pinnell's. So kind of a, I mean, that'll sure will be kind of a private party. We'll have to find out from Bruce if the other, he's got two sides of Pinnell's that is going to be open. The patio, which has got the, you know, the roof. It should be a beautiful, everything looks weather-wise terrific, upstate and downstate. You know, only, you know, minor 10%-ish kind of chances of rain. So I imagine this is just incredibly frustrating to, you know, to owners. I know, you know, if I had a horse that, you know, got to this juncture, I would want to be in attendance. And of course, they were unable as well at Gulfstream to be there for the Florida Derby. So it's tough. It's just, you know, and particularly for some of the older partners and for Knowlton himself, that were right there from the beginning, including Funnyside, a chance to win a Belmont Stakes trophy would be, you know, and is very special. So to not be able to be there for everything that goes along with horse ownership and the pleasure of running, whether it's, you know, honestly, whether it's any level, you're in it for what's involved in being on hand. And when it comes to these kinds of races, it's, you know, potential thrills of a lifetime for people. At the same time, this is a, you know, once in a century circumstance, and I think deep down everybody understands the, you know, the difficulty and the, you know, the execution elements. So ideally, you know, coming out of, into and out of Belmont, there'll be other opportunities, whether it's Travers or anything else that that the Saratoga team gets to enjoy with Tis the Law. Couple of other three-year-old notes I saw where Jay, we'll talk to Jay Pridman Friday, but Jay noting that Authentic is going to officially point for the Haskell. Saw a few other, quite a few other horses that are making decisions. Storm the Court, Peter Urton going to the Ohio Derby a week from Saturday. Keep tabs on all of that. Right now, and in anticipation of the Ribblesdale case, how close? Let me pull back my my video and make sure. We got about a minute. Yeah, about 3 minutes. We'll wait for this race, and after the Ribblesdale, Peter Bradley's going to join us. And looking forward to visiting. I haven't talked to Peter in quite a while. And Bradley, of course, coming out of Saturday and the Grade One win with She's a Julie. Yesterday, I didn't want to bother Steve Asmussen. He was with us last week. She's a Julie, such a important horse in the barn. And so I reached for Peter, and we couldn't connect for yesterday because Steve Asmussen was undoubtedly completely involved with Son Keith racing yesterday in his first official ride as a jock. And that came in the nightcap at Lone Star and a very good second on Senior Jobim. That Asmussen trains and owns. That new colossus of Broberg, spoiling things a little, but a good start to, don't know how long Keith Asmussen's gonna ride, but for now, he's off and running. And you have to figure that Steve was gonna put him on a live horse, right? He wasn't gonna put him on a hopeless log shot. So Senior Jobim made some sense. Pretty funny. Let me give you a quick glance at what's happening with this Ribblesdale. 2 minutes to post. And, the horse that Kev liked in here, Trefoil, is 8-1 on the domestic tote. And I've been checking and balancing things off with the odds checker prices in the betting shops in the UK, and it's always helpful. You'd like to think that the international punting crowd that there's horses that they have a better handle on in many cases than we do. Frankly Darling, of course, was going to be favored and continues to be the public preference domestically, 6-5 on our tote. And Miss Yoda, the See the Stars filly from Gosden, 7-2, second choice in here. And then up to Passion, the Coolmore Galileo filly, O'Brien Moore, 6-1, 8-1 on Trefoil, fourth choice on the tote, and second choice, though, in the shops. And so, that's what I'm always looking for, is the disparity between the international market and, what our tote, and ours is a commingled, we're getting commingled tote, but these are the, these are what the bookie shops are offering. And on that front, Frankly Darling, just above even, 5-4. Trefoil, 4-1. Miss Yoda, 9-2, 5-1. Passion, about 6-1 widely. Anistimon, the 4, is 8-9-1. And then it kind of careens up. So really, the race seemingly boiling down, to the 4, 5, 8, 9, 11. It's not a huge field, in here, in the Ribblesdale. And, just seeing where they are. They're loading. Still got, a few. How many we got left? We're just about set to load, Case. How far behind are you? Are you in fairly close order? I think I've got one behind. Flag is up. Use mine, Case.
And Anastasia dropped out towards the rear of the field, as the first one to show is Golden Lips with the cheek pieces on, shows in front. A red cap for Frankly Darling, runs quite keen in the early stages. Colour change West End Girl, light blue jacket there for Sheen Murphy, holds the position against the running rail and showing in third. So I Told You and Passioner together, and then comes Miss Yoda. The maroon and blue colours caught out a little wide as they race downhill. Trefoilin the green started a tad slowly, has moved up to be in halfway down the field. And Istimon and the nose-banded runner hold fast the next couple. And then Anastasia in green and red, and she's on the outside of Bahrani Star. Mainly white colours for Andret Zeni as they've completed the first third of the journey. They're very well strung out. It's a good 4 to 5 length lead for Golden Lips and Josephine Gordon as they run round the turn towards the halfway stage. There'll be about 12 lengths first to last. Frankly Darling and Frankie Dettori sit in second position, and then the light blue West End Girl, Miss Yoda and Rob Havlin, the blue sleeve jacket, moved up into a share of third position. Passion and So I Told You, the next pair as they approach the last half mile, a length away to Trefoil, and then in Istimon. The orange cap behind those is Hold Fast, nose-banded runner. She's got two behind her, Bahrani Star and Anastasia, as they head then towards the home turn. They have just over a half mile to go. It's a reduced lead now for Golden Lips. She's only about two lengths ahead. Frankly Darling in second place. There's about a length and a half to West End Girl and on her outside, Miss Yoda. Passion in the dark blue colours, making good progress. Has come through almost in fourth position now. In Istimon and So I Told You, the next pair, and then Trefoil on the extreme right is labouring. They are down the straight, and still Golden Lips has the advantage, but now Frankly Darling comes to join her and goes past her. Frankly Darling has gone through the lead here to Golden Lips, who's backing on well. Miss Yoda in Istimon on the right, the light blues coming with a late challenge. Bahrani Star is running on as well, but Frankly Darling, she's clear. Three length advantage now inside the last furlong. In Istimon in the light blue, James Doyle on the outside trying to chase her down, but it's in vain. Frankly Darling, Frankie Dettori win. In Istimon in second, Passion in third, Bahrani Star was next, Anastasia, Miss Yoda, and the pace setting Golden Lips in line behind those 5, 6, 7.
Well, frankly, Darling, just too good. But that Estimon came running and was making nice late progress. So Frankly Darling comes through at a short price. That's the 5 with Estimon the 4 second. And I think I saw Passion ended up third, the 9, Moore and Dettori, right? Was that the Golden Lips was a big price and ran very well. Here it is. Yeah, Frankly Darling, and Istimon, Passion, Bahrani Star, who I think was also a big price, actually ended up fourth. So there's your order of finish in the Ribblesdale. Three races in here at Royal Greenwich. bottom of the hour coming up, and we'll stay here. And Case, let me send you, it's been a long time since we had Peter Bradley join us, and I'm going to have Case, let me send you this number, because I don't know if it's still in the system from the last time we talked. And Pete Bradley, who has a really, not unique approach, but a very effective approach around the game with some pinhooking and put some groups together, and be fun to catch up with him. And, you know, certainly I'm actually curious about, you know, the decision to keep on with She's a Julie, because it seemed at the end of last year that there was a speculation that she was, you know, she was going to retire, but they come back and certainly rewarded with the Grade One win on Saturday. So multiple Grade One winner now, She's a Julie, and you would imagine that, you know, plotting a course toward the Breeders' Cup distaff, and a real pleasure to welcome Pete Bradley back to the show. Pete, congratulations on She's a Julie's second grade one win.
Thanks, Steve. That was something special, wasn't it?
Special seems to just kind of hang on her, and whether she's getting enough attention and appreciation from the public or not, the barn just adores her, and of course part of that, you know, the story behind her naming, and this feels like one of those horses, Pete, that that they're not going to let you pick up at any point and bring to a sale or bring to a breeding shed.
No, she's pretty special on the racetrack. I mean, you know, the horses that are consistent, especially at that level and, you know, throughout the race at Churchill, but this filly tries every time, and to find a horse with that kind of desire, and then at any talent level, but especially when you're at that grade one level, you know, she's got her spot where she wants to run, and the mile and a 16th is the perfect distance for her, but it doesn't matter if she's going a mile and a quarter or what. She may not be the first there, but she's always the toughest trying to get there.
You know, it was funny on Saturday. We talk about, you know, the race result before we talk about some wider, you know, elements of the Bradley Thoroughbred operation. There was speculation and some question coming out of, you know, the season starter about, you know, what ailed her that day. And so she was really getting very little notice going into Saturday.
No love at all, as we like to say.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, look, she had a really troubled trip in her first start. She hit the gate so hard you could hear it in Lexington from Louisville without the crowds. And, you know, she never got into the race the way she needs to run. And, you know, the good news was when she looked like she was finished, Ricardo wrapped up on her, gave her a nice ride home. And, you know, in hindsight, she probably got more out of that race than if she'd been hard ridden and finished, you know, third or something in there. So, you know, those guys did the right thing by her. And then she came out of the race. Steve said she'd been training better than she was last spring. And he said, "Would you mind if I enter her in the Ogden Phipps?" I said, "Steve, I don't mind at all." So it was pretty humorous conversation, though, with Steve. I like him to ask my opinion, but there's a man who's his opinion's first and foremost with me.
You know, she has continued to improve in very small, steady increments. Let's talk about her backstory too, as part of this, and in some ways, you know, the whole backdrop of how you operate and how you approach the business and the game in general.
Well, you know, for our racing partnerships, we try to keep the numbers of people fairly small in the groups, and we try to keep, you know, no more than 25 horses in training, and at the same time, pointing for Saturday horses. To find one like this is hundreds of hours of searching and, you know, trying to find somebody who will, either we buy them at two-year-old sales, I buy horses out of Europe, and it's hard to find, you know, American dirt horses that you can buy into their career. So this filly, her backstory is really interesting for me. I love this filly as a yearling, and she did not pass the vet for me. When you look at, you know, 2,000 horses at a September sale or 1,500 horses or whatever it may be, I'm not one who can remember every horse, but I remembered this one. And when Tommy Walters came to me and said that Carol Castile would be interested in selling a piece of her, probably, it was like I didn't even have to, you know, think, did I see this one? It immediately popped to mind. So we bought her, you know, midway through her three-year-old year. Gosh, when was it? It was in July of 18, and would have been right after the Iowa Oaks, if I remember. So anyway, we were lucky enough to buy into a majority interest in her at that time, and And since then, you know, we've put some more partners in. So it's been a good story for everyone who's had her hands on this filly.
This also, you know, hints at as I referenced, the larger storyline of Bradley Thoroughbreds and all the different, you know, methods and the methodologies. You talk about the, you know, the yearling purchases, and are they all starting out as Pinhook Enterprises, or are there some that are bought that, you know, earmarked yourself for racing?
Yeah. In the past, well, we buy for clients at the yearling sales, but the majority of our horses have been for Pinhooks. And again, you know, we've been lucky enough to Pinhook some awfully nice ones, like Lady Eli comes to mind as maybe the best ever. And then for the racing partnerships, most of the time I've either bought privately or at two-year-old sales. So again, you know, talk about lucky. We bought Day at the Spa at the OBS March sale a number of years ago when I was trying to find a New York bred when, you know, the New York bred purses were first kind of exploding. So you know, I think we may start going to the yearling sales more to try to buy for our racing ventures. But for the most part, no, it's been two-year-olds and horses already who have run on the track.
And you know, interestingly, you know, there you look at any number of results on any weekend. This one, you know, obviously she's a Julie, but you've had your hands involved in numerous participants, even just this past weekend, because you know, I see you feature Neptune Storm as you know, as a horse that you guys are, you know, continue to track. I mean, talk about the way in which, you know, you really, Peter, you've had a long run of success that obviously, you know, success breeds success, but it's hard for a lot of operations to sustain a model, you know, over a long period of time, and you know, you seem to be doing it.
Well, thanks. It's I would say it's 80% hard work and 10% knowledge and another 50% good luck. I know that doesn't add up, but that's the horse business doesn't add up. So, you know, it's somebody asked me a couple of years what I do, and I said I'm a talent scout, and you know, just like somebody in the NFL or something like that, looking for talent. And it's just so gratifying when it works out. I mean, you know, the pinhooking operation, yes, we try to make money at it, but I'd rather sell a good horse than get a lot of money for one that can't run. And you just, you know, because that, I think that competitive fire that people have to, you know, try and find the best, that kind of burns pretty strong in me. And it's, you know, that's what makes me go to sleep with a smile on this weekend. You know, when we had three stakes winners that we picked out, the third being Captain Bombastic, who won the Mike Lee.
Very nice. Neptune Storm, of course, won the San Francisco Mile for Richie Baltus. And I mentioned Maya Englehart and Captain Bombastic in the start of the New York Triple. But, you know, anybody that wants to see the remarkable roster of horses that Bradley Thoroughbreds has been involved in at you know, somewhere along their career, BradleyThoroughbreds.com. And you know, Peter, on that front, haven't had a chance yet to recap the sale, the OBS sale that ended on Friday, and we'll talk about it with Sid Fernando tomorrow a little bit more regarding the, you know, the new sires and so forth, but would love your impression of how things shook out on at Ocala this past week.
Yeah, really interesting sale, or at least that's the nice way to put it. I think the most interesting part of that sale is the top end of the market was as strong as last year, in my opinion. That top 10 or 15% of the horses, if they jump through all the hoops that we need to at those sales, you got paid for them. The bad part was is that the balance of the sale was very difficult. Good, solid racing types were not bringing a lot of money. And I bought three horses that I think are very good value for what I bought them for. Now, having said that, I chased a number of horses that I really liked, but you had to pay to get quality still. And that's the perceived quality of what a two-year-old sales horse is supposed to be. We have to do it. We have to go in 10-1 and gallop out strong, or 20-4 or 21, which, you know, in the end of the day, these horses never have to do that again. But it has become the bar that the purchasers want in order to give you money for your horses. And I think that if you take a look under that bar and look at a lot of other attributes of those horses, you can find value at those sales. Unfortunately, a lot of those people weren't there.
You mentioned the three that you bought, and it's to me, it's very notable. You bought an Intermischief filly for $150,000, which is a relative, you know, relative bargain for anything Into Mischief. That was a 10-flat performance Nick DeMerrick offered. But you spent $20,000 on a Street Sense colt, and there was also DeMerrick. And then from Top Line, $25,000 on a Wicked Strong filly. And, you know, we were doing, you know, we had sort of our eye ourselves, and the one horse that we were interested in, actually, we were hoping to get for about 25 and ended up at 40. And I'm intrigued, Peter, that, you know, that you're quite willing to try horses that, you know, for 20 and 25,000, that's a price in everybody's range.
Right. Now, those two in particular were for clients who had price points that they needed to hit. So it's almost harder to get together a list of those kinds than it is for somebody who says, I have $400,000 to spend.
Sure.
And it's also, again, not as profitable for me, but in some ways it's a lot more fun to try and find those kind of horses and have them work out. The pressure's not on you when those work out, and the pressure is really on you when you buy an expensive one that doesn't work out.
So that people can appreciate, you know, the price-value ratio. What about these two horses in the 2025 range was appealing enough? Obviously, you know, a Street Sense colt that's got a stallion that's got a stake type and Pants on Fire in the second
right.
dam.
You know,
that's an attractive page.
Big strong colt, got across the ground well, and obviously there's a flaw there. His conformation through his left knee in particular is not tremendous, let's put it that way. However, having said that, if you watch him gallop, he hits the ground well. It's not like, you know, he's an egg beater going down there. He's got an economy of motion. And, he did everything right and came back sound, and he vetted. And so we took a shot on him at the price.
You know, it's funny that you reference the egg beater motion, and of course a sale like this in the wake of Vekoma's performance in the Carter, you know sellers can say, well, don't worry about that because look at Vekoma.
Yeah, if we knew exactly what it took to be a racehorse, there'd only be about three people that had the good ones. So that's the great thing about this game is we can, we try and figure out what we like as a horse, what we have that has worked for us, and then hopefully it works part of the time. You know, it's it's a 20%. If you can get it right 20% of the time, you're pretty smart in this business.
How much of your approach when it comes to the stallion elements and that your willingness to try first crop sires, you don't necessarily know, how they're going to perform on the racetrack. You know, you've got physical properties and you've got the breeze shows and the walks and the inspections. But talk about the evolution of first crop purchases and if your approach to that has changed at all over the years.
Yeah. The thing about first crop sires is that I think you look for consistency. It doesn't always mean that just because a sire stamps his horses isn't an absolute. I think AP Indy didn't necessarily stamp his get. You know, if you bred him to a gray mare, you got a gray yearling. And but man, the quality was there in all of them. So I think we can get a little bit too blinded by consistent types. But that's something I really do look for. And then when you get to the two-year-old sales, if as a group, they don't all have to be 10 flats, but if they're all consistent, if a young sire's, if there's eight or nine of them in a sale and you're kind of saying seven of them look pretty good going down the lane as far as how they use themselves, I think that is a reason to get high on a, or to get a little more aggressive on liking a certain sire at the two-year-old sales after, consistency and frame and balance and athleticism as yearlings, yes. Then if they can do the same as two-year-olds, it gives you an even, more of a good feeling about that horse. And then they have to run. So the thing about the freshman sires is if they look good and do it right, nobody's ever had a bad one, so everybody wants to buy one. And that's one of the most interesting things about freshman sires. As much as I like them, if I see a freshman sire that does something versus kind of an old standard horse like a Broken Vow, and especially if I've got a price point of what I've got to meet for a client, I'm more likely to go with the proven horse than I am the freshman sire.
Yeah, and
that's a
value
play on my part. I just think you get more bang for the buck.
Well, and we talk with Sid every week, and the Hill and Dale sponsors our pedigree conversations, and we talk about reaching in an uncertain market, reaching for the kinds of produce that just gives you a high percentage of success of just getting a a winner, a horse that that's a runner, and that there's a real there's a real economy in that, playing percentages essentially.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with that.
I looked through and you referenced Stay at the Spa, and there's been, when it comes to your groups, there's kinds of ebbs and flows or people that are consistently want to be involved with your horses, and I've gotten over the years friendly with the Steve Lehman, for instance, and you took him on such a thrill ride with Day at the Spa.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Steve is a real fan, and he's had some luck in the game, but when he's got one that doesn't work out, he's not one to complain either. And he knows the ups and downs, and that's the kind of people I love to work with in this business. Even more important, and I try to in each of these racing ventures I do, is to try and find one or two new people to get into the game through these ventures. And that's been a lot of fun. Tim and Anna Cambrin, who are now some of my best clients and friends, through a mutual friend, and they dabbled in the horse business, they decided to try racing. And I had just found this filly in South America named Decida, and said, you know, this is one you ought to get in on. And the day of her first race at Saratoga in the Ballston Spa, if I remember, they were up for the race, and she was about 10 or 15 lengths off at the half-mile pole, and at the top of the lane, she was still about eight out, and I said, I don't think this is our day, Tim. And that's when she turned on the jets and got up and got her first graded stake up here, nosing out a filly named Teppan. And so that's a good way to get people into this business. Get a little lucky with
yes.
the first one like that.
Well, and you know, you've had, obviously you've got a great relationship with Sol Kumin and Sol with the partners that he brings to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done a heck of a job, that's for sure. And it's hard to keep him out of a horse. He loves it so much.
Well, you said it, I didn't. What, Peter, your background, I last time you were on, I don't remember if we talked about how you came to the business.
Goodness, it's been a long time ago now. You know, grew up on a cattle ranch in California, and my mom had a hunter-jumper business that started actually with three Welsh ponies from my brother, sister, and myself that turned into a 150-stall riding school in California, which
wow.
was originally named Potomac West. I couldn't stand show horses. I had to ride 4 hours a day. I wanted to play football. I wanted to hunt and fish and chase cattle. And so I kind of stopped riding from the time I was 13 and unless it was to do something on the ranch cattle-wise. And in college, my brother and I, we'd had friends in the racehorse business, and we sort of thought that would be something we could use the ranch for in California, the thoroughbreds. And we started pinhooking a couple with Rollin Baugh, and I then went to work for Gene Cleveland on the racetrack after I got out of university. He had Princess Corinda at the time, a grade one winner. Who was some kind of race filly, and I just caught the bug. It stuck from there. I decided to come to Kentucky, and I worked for Fred Seitz at Brookdale Farm. From there, I went to Cromwell Bloodstock and ended up being the head of private sales at Lane's End before I went out on my own. So I got to work with some very good people over a 20-year period, and it served me well.
Well, the string of successes speaks for themselves. I should ask too, given the last 90 days or so, and you know the circumstance that you know put the industry almost entirely on pause. Peter, any observations that some things that you think the industry can learn from this? I mean, certainly the scheduling topic is being kicked around, and the you know the awareness of you know spreading out the product so that things aren't on top of each other as much. You know, not necessarily you know less racing, but it does feel like the handle number that's you know that's out there is. You know, kind of being spread like frosting on a cake. It might be more of a sheet cake as opposed to a layer cake. That's something that I'm sort of sensing out of these last couple of months. But some thoughts about, you know, where we are and, you know, how we move forward, you know, as an industry.
Gosh, the $64 question, it never stops being asked, and we never completely answer it correctly because there's no centralized direction in this business to make things work. I mean, you've hit on some key points there. You know, the product less, in some ways, less is more has really shown than it is in, over the last 90 days. You know, again, we're the only major sport being televised, which is obviously an absolute plus. Scheduling, yeah, when races aren't on top of each other, it's better for fans of racing. It's better for bettors. It makes sense for everyone. Can the tracks, you know, get together and make it work? I'm a bit of a pessimist, so I hope they can, but unless you had somebody telling them, you know, this is your slot, this is when your race needs to go off, I don't see it necessarily working, which is too bad. But I think that there's so many things we can do to make this game better. We just need... I'm a big fan of having a racing czar of some sort. I don't think it'll ever happen. But you need a Pete Rozelle or somebody like that who can manage our, quote, league and do what's best for the commercial and, you know, popular side of it to make us relevant in such a vast amount of sporting opportunities out there.
Well, the gambling landscape, certainly changing and evolving, and we've had this protracted opportunity. It's still very uncertain how much, new business has come, into the game. That part of it is really kind of a question mark. Out of curiosity, was it difficult? Not so much attracting new potential clients, but do you sense that from a financial standpoint and investment, as it were, that there's concerns and kind of a weakness on that front? Ownership, there's two parallel tracks here. And that is, the ownership side and the handle side. The horse players and the owners are central. Just curious.
Right. But they're both in their own spheres, and they overlap.
Yes.
Some, but very little, really. It's been hard putting together money this year for my racing ventures. There's no doubt about that. It's based on what I did last year and what I projected for this year, I thought I would, be able to increase it by 50%. It has not increased, and it's actually dropped off a bit. Having said that, I've got a couple of new people in who are very enthusiastic. So, we'll just have to see how it plays out over the next 2 years, more than just this short-term, fix that we're in. People are, they're less willing to put money into a non-essential investment.
How, as a corollary to this, how difficult or how problematic is the, you said the spheres, how problematic is the needs and interests of the breeding side, which is frequently referred to as the tail wagging the dog when it comes to the game, and there's so many working parts to this industry, and everybody is caught up in their in their own world, and none should have, more influence and control than the other. I've referred to it, so many parts of the game as a, the proverbial tripod, where, you need all three legs to stand. You touching on all of it. Although, do you have any mares? How much breeding have you done?
I used to have as many as up to a piece of 20 mares. I have a piece of one mare right now, which is in some ways sad, but it's a function. It's also, look, I enjoy the racing part of this game as the more than the breeding part personally. There's a lot of pluses. It's the breeding part is a very slow process to. Between doing a mating, having a mare in foal, raising a yearling, it's 3 years to get a horse to the racetrack. So it's a labor of love, a labor of patience. There's a real gift to it, but it's something I've kind of moved away from more than moved in, you know, into over the last five or 6 years. And unfortunately, I think that there's a lot of smaller breeders that have been edged out in this game too. Guys who like it, but you know, haven't been able to play. And, you know, the owners I have that used to have, you know, 2 to 6 mares, I've got a lot less of people like that than there were 15 years ago. That's for sure.
Well, and that's a theme that has been repeated at every level, right? I mean, the small backyard breeder, the small training outfit, you know,
and that's why racing partners,
it's a tough environment.
What I do, and from West Point to Eclipse to what I do, have so much traction is because you can play the game with, you know, at a high level or any level with, you know, less capital input into it.
Well, the multi-pronged approach that Bradley Thoroughbreds has employed has been consistently successful, and Pete, it's been too long since we've had a chance to visit, that's because it means you've won some great ones, or that you had your hand in three different steak wins.
Until I get to talk to you.
Well, you would have, even if this was a great two. You know, one of the motivations was I didn't want to bother Steve yesterday because I could sense that he was out of his mind nervous about Keith's riding debut.
Not only was he nervous, he forgot his boots and he had to show up in his Birkenstocks to put his kid on the horse.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, the next generation of riding Asmussen until he gets too tall.
That's right. Steve, great to talk to you.
Pete, thanks so much for this. And you can visit BradleyThoroughbreds.com. You can follow Peter. I think that must be daughter Devin.
Devin, yes. And Aaron West.
Devin
heads up our racing operation, too. We've got a good triumvirate here.
Well, Bradley TBS for Peter to follow, and Peter, continued success. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care, Steve.
Peter Bradley and Bradley Thoroughbreds. She's a Julie, but also pinhooking success, Neptune Storm, and also had a hand in the Mike Lee winner, Captain Bombastic. And that was, and actually, I think Tom Hanley is in a lot of other right. That's a Hanley. I'm pretty sure that right wasn't that Hanley. I'm almost positive that Bombastic was maybe not. I'll check. We'll take a quick break, and we're missing the King Stand. We got to. Right? Is that the... No, the King Edward, not the King Stand. King Stand comes at 10:35. I got to take a break, obviously, Case. We'll only probably take 2 breaks today. But after the King Stand at the bottom of the hour, the King Edward was going here, and you had that very short price mogul. And I didn't watch it. Tommy Drury is going to join us. We'll talk about Art Collector, who's headed toward the bluegrass, and Bruce Lunsford giving Drury a big, big chance here with this horse, and Tommy responding beautifully. That performance Saturday was outstanding and put Art Collector right in amongst the top 3-year-olds. So we'll talk to Tommy Drury today, too. But Vance Hansen is going to join us next. Andy Serling, Hour 3, as well as John Curran from Delaware. There's your... And Royal Ascot. What more do you need? At the Races, back after this, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.